It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hey, we welcome you inside the Bill Ford Tough Studio Monday. The Boomer and Geo program. Couple of days before the new year of 2025. Myself, Willie Colon, hanging out with you until 10 o'clock. We've got Zoo and Fleegs, and we got Chris Lopresti, and of course you at 888-808-1019. It is going to be a good day to get a lot of stuff off your chest, should you choose to do so. We will get to the Jets, I promise, coming up next hour, maybe later in the hour as well. But of course, we will start with the Giants and an interesting win yesterday. And I say good morning to one Willie Colon. Willie, how are you?
Morning, Jerry.
Most of our Christmas decorations are gone.
I know. I noticed that. I was surprised. Usually people hang on to them for at least another week or so.
No, it is gone. December 30th, see ya. So, and see ya to the number one pick, perhaps, for the Giants. And, you know, obviously there's a lot with the Jets. And you did your post-game show on SNY yesterday, which we'll get to all them, because there's a lot of different angles with the Jets, which we'll get to coming up, let's say, at 7 o'clock. But obviously listening to this radio station, looking online, not that it's the best place to look at social media, the Giants are a hot topic for a variety of reasons. Right. And number one, it certainly seems to be the overwhelming consensus that the fans are not happy like the team is after yesterday's performance.
Yeah. Listen, I understand, right? When you have an opportunity to pick the number one guy in the draft and you're slotted at it, especially with the need at quarterback for the Giants, it's why would you give that up? But players are never going to tank, man. It just doesn't happen. Like, the guys are going to go out there and play. And if you're a Giants fan, you should have some type of happiness. I mean, the team hasn't scored 40 points or what, since 2019. I don't know. I mean, they're sitting in the fourth spot. I think there's still a chance they can get Shador or Cam. It looks like, you know, if we was to play mock draft real quick, I think Patriots do get Travis Hunter at number one. Mm-hmm. I can see, you know, there's a lot of talk of the Titans going to get a quarterback. I can see them going to get a receiver instead of a quarterback. And on and on and on. So I don't know. I just think right now, even the Browns, you know, they need O-line help. They need receiver help. They definitely need quarterback help, obviously. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think the Giants, they'll be fine. I think it's a lot of hoopla for nothing.
A lot still has to be determined, obviously, because you've got one more week of games to go. But considering the fact that you've only got four three-win teams, it is interesting in the fact that Cleveland's got Deshaun Watson, who restructured his contract. I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't know if they're going to draft a quarterback or not. No one does.
Nobody knows.
The Titans, who knows? I think we're pretty comfortable saying the Patriots will not be drafting a quarterback. So while everything changed, perhaps nothing changed. And that
exactly
either one or both of the top two quarterbacks in the draft will still be there for them at four. Also, there's the chance that one is gone and one is not, and it takes the guessing out of who they pick. Or perhaps both are gone, and now they've got to go in a different direction. And maybe, who knows, maybe that's the best case scenario for this team this year, because while they are, meaning Warden and Sanders, are clearly the top two quarterbacks on every mock draft I look at, maybe I don't know if they're franchise quarterbacks.
I don't think anybody knows. And I think if you watch the game Saturday against, you know, Colorado versus BYU, you know, he didn't look good. He didn't look great behind that patchy offensive line. You know who has another patchy offensive line? The New York Giants, right? So, yes, the kid, I think he has enough moxie and definitely arm talents there. He's definitely strong. But overall, man, I think the Giants need an offensive line. It doesn't matter who you draft or where you go. If you don't have an offensive line that can protect a young kid, if you're going to put him back there, it's going to be, for me, in my eyes, it's going to be no different from what Daniel Jones did.
All true, but I would also say that offensive line was playing well before the Andrew Thomas injury, which changed everything. And I would also tell you that the Jets' offensive line was coming together, and we'll get to them at seven, but just to your point, that Jet offense was, I know they didn't score, I get it. They were humming along those first couple of drives. And then I guess it was when the game just changed.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers is running for his life. And all of a sudden, and now I'll bring it back to Sanders Saturday night. There's a lot of people that say, look, he's not any good. That dude, he had no time to throw the ball
at all.
And it's exactly why I thought the Giants were going to be a good team this year. I thought with what they did on the defensive line and with the edge rushers, I thought they were going to get after the quarterback and they would win low scoring games and they would not give other quarterbacks time to throw. Now, that didn't obviously turn out to be the case, but that's how you win. You know, if you don't have a great quarterback, you disrupt the other team. And Shedeur Sanders, I watched a lot of that game the other night. Every time he snapped, there were three guys in his face.
But that's, I mean, he was dealing with that since he landed in Colorado. The offensive line play for Colorado.
That bad?
I think Saturday was just kind of like, it exploded. I think for a lot of people that paid attention to Colorado sure. knows that their offensive line hasn't been the strong suit for them. Overall, you know, Shedeur, I think he's a talented kid. I think he's going to be fine in the NFL. But I think right now you can't move forward unless you address some of the issues that they're dealing with for the Jets and Giants.
Well, I'm
talking more, if not a star, definitely depth-wise. They need more quality depth.
They need players.
Yes.
That having been said, here's what I saw yesterday, and we've seen it all year. Malik Nabers is just ridiculous.
He is so good,
and I know we've kind of known that. I mean, he goes over, 100 receptions, 1,000 yards, and I could be wrong. I know he missed at least one. I think he missed a couple of games this season. So he's done it in 14 or 15 games, not 16. And this isn't a three-win season where it's been a quarterback carousel all year, and the other guy who started is in Minnesota on a practice squad.
Right.
And yet you still look at his numbers, it's like, damn. I mean, they really hit on a kid last season. Now you need to put the pieces around him, obviously.
And I think they will. I think we still, for a lot of Giants fans who woke up pissed off, like, oh, we had it's going to work out. I think it's tough to tell Giants fans that after the season they had, but I still think it's going to work out. So I still think you have an opportunity to snag a quarterback. And it's just a matter of how this all plays out. And I really feel like, I don't feel like there's a need to set the house on fire solely because if the Giants lost the number one spot.
No, and I agree with that too, but I do understand the Giant fan that's upset if for nothing else losing control of the draft. That I do understand. Now, I saw, I don't know how many people were actually in that building, but boy, when they made play, give them credit from this standpoint.
For competing.
Also, they got out to a big lead. The Colts kept coming back and coming after them, and they had a response and an answer every single, it's kind of, you're looking up like, wow, the Giants are clobbering the Colts. Next thing you know, it's a one-score game. Giants score again. One-score game. It was from that standpoint, it was impressive.
It felt good to see them have pride. I mean, this team was on its way for being winless at home. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
A brutal stat, especially if you're on that team. So the fact that they was able to kind of rally and really show up on Sunday, I mean, that's enough in itself, especially when you go into the game, they're talking about firing Daboll. Do you hold on to the GM? The number one pick, how does that turn out? Like, there was a lot this team had to deal with on Sunday. So for the fact that they came out and played for themselves, I think that's a good sign.
What do you make of the idea, and this is just a general question, not so much just about yesterday, a team that has been so offensively challenged to score, and then it's kind of like, in a way, everything that could have went wrong for the Jets yesterday went wrong, mm-hmm. everything that could have went right for the Giants yesterday went right, but the idea that this team put up 45 points against a team, now the Colts are not great, don't get me wrong, they're not a Super Bowl contending team. But that was a team that still was challenging for a playoff spot, still had an opportunity. And I know Joe Flacco was playing, but I could also point to Joe Flacco earlier in the year that played relatively well. That was a team that was playing for a lot, and they hung 45 on them.
Yeah, I also think they fell asleep. I don't think the Colts thought the Giants were going to look that good or be that efficient on offense. So I think a little bit of that. And this is credit for the Giants for having a good day. I get your standpoint. Like, the Colts were still fighting for a playoff spot. But like you said, you're watching Malik Nabers right here just put on a show.
Yeah.
Drew Locke looked great. I mean, the defense actually fought for a good portion of the game. So overall, man, I just, it's hard towards, and being a guy who was in this position, it's hard to look around your locker room and see who still wants to fight, right? A lot of these guys most guys in this position are planning a sandals vacation. They're ready to get the hell out of here.
Oh, yeah.
So for these guys to show up, and be ready to fight and put up a fight against the Colts, I think that speaks a lot to Brian Daboll, just like how we look at Mike McCarthy, right? We're starting to look at Mike McCarthy in a different light solely because the Cowboys are playing harder, and we're started playing for him, it seems like. Right? The season, it is what it is. But at least they're putting out a fight where you can lay, you're not turning the channel every time this team is on TV. So,
all right, so what does that say about Brian Daboll? Because there's a lot of, not that the fans make the decisions, but we've seen in the past where ownership does hear what the fans think and say, and there has been an overwhelming swell lately of let's go, let's start over, fire everybody. But then you see a performance like yesterday. I mean, Chris and I sat here on Friday, and I said to him, I can't give you stats, I can't give you wins and losses. It's more of a gut feeling. I'm certainly no football expert by any stretch, But I feel like Brian Daboll's a good football guy, and he knows what he's doing.
I think when last time I was on with you, we had Mara Hodge on, and he said something in reference to when you feel like you have your guy, you stick with your guy, you believe in him, you believe in the process, you believe that he's going to get it right. If that's the case, you stay with Brian Daboll. Because I've talked to guys who are on that team. They love him. They speak highly of him. He holds guys accountable. He's tough. But he also has a plan. Things haven't gone right for the Giants. We get that. But you have to believe he can get you out of this. And so we'll see what happens. And does that mean drafting a quarterback at that position? Sure, maybe. But overall, I think what you saw Sunday was guys still believing in the plan, fighting for themselves and him, and walking out of the building with a necessary W.
You know, there's been enough games this year, and I would even point to, only because I was there and I called the game with Boomer, Phil, and Gio was on the sideline, that Eagle game back in October was atrocious, absolutely atrocious. But what I would tell you is part of the reason why it was atrocious was the quarterback play was bad.
Right.
Defensively, I know the final score looks ugly, but if you saw the way they came out and quote-unquote fought the first couple of quarters in that game, before, you know, there's only so many times you can go look up and the team got no points. You know, the game plan defensively was good. The effort was good. They got after Jalen Hurts pretty good early on in that game. I think there are games I can point to that show me the team was ready to go, but there's only so much guys can take. Now, you've obviously said you've been in that position. How difficult would it be, theoretically, for a defense to continually go out there and have to get the offense off the field when your offense is generating nothing?
I mean, fatigue sets in, right? That's the biggest issue right now. But I think a lot of part of being a part of a really good defense or a stout defense is understanding you can only do your job, right? Your job is to get three and outs and get off the field and get the ball back to the offense. I think when you saw what Dexter Lawrence was able to do, especially with the rest of that front seven, I thought they were sneaky good for a good portion of the year. I think they just didn't get a lot of credit because of the way their record looked. But I thought a lot of people who walked into that building was like, man, if the offensive side of this thing was better, this team could be dangerous. And I think they still are dangerous. They just got to get a signal. They got to get a play caller. They got to get somebody that's throw the ball and can be a lot more efficient at the position and get some offensive line help. But I don't think the Giants are that far away. I know people are like, what are you talking about? They get a solid quarterback, man. They can make some noise.
Well, it's part of it. You know, the secondary obviously has had their issues too, but I do agree with you. They're closer than we think, and yet they are miles away from where they need to be. So it's an interesting line to walk. The other thing would be, are you going to be the type of franchise that is going to draft that quarterback and play him day one? Now, we've seen it work with Jaden Daniels. We saw it work last year with C.J. Stroud, but I can point to 100 different other examples where it does not work. You know, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, just for two.
I'm glad you said that. I think there's this overall rule. If you draft him at number one, that he has to play right away.
Well, that's because of the salary cap structure, the way it works.
Yeah, but then to your point, what you were just about to say, guys get burnt out and get cooked. Like, we've seen it time after time with the Jets and other positions. Not everybody's ready to play right away. I mean, it is what it is. So you're going to have to figure out, whoever you draft, you're going to really have to figure out, is this kid ready for the spotlight right away? Jaden Daniels just happens to be that guy. I don't think every quarterback is that guy right away. Look how great Sam Darnold yesterday, right? Oh. Look at his road and what he had to go through.
The throw he made to Jordan Addison in the back right corner of the end zone just led him. Now, Addison makes a great catch, don't get me wrong. But the throw he makes and the I'm assuming he was aware that he was about to get clobbered and unloads the ball just in time. That's not the same guy that was here with the Jets.
Well, part of it because the O-line protection. Minnesota's offensive line was phenomenal last night. But overall, Sam, when he got here, it was like everybody in the city was like, please save us.
Yeah.
And there's a kid from USC who was just like, hey, I'm just here to just do my job. And it was a lot on him. They didn't have any help on the offensive line. They didn't have any talent necessarily on the offensive side of the ball. And it was just him. And he walked out of his building with mono. And they sent him down the road. That's the only thing that Sam Darnold receives from the New York Jets. So it's tough. It's tough, but I'm happy to see him. You know, listen, the kid got a shot.
Yep. And before we break, because this is something I was thinking about too when we were, you know, I watched a lot of the Viking game, and it brings it back to the conversation about what the Giants are going to do, what they may do, and what they might not do. Who knows? Is the quarterback head coach relationship. I mean, I can look at Justin Herbert and say, until Jim Harbaugh got there, underachieved, and they were never as good as we thought they would be.
He was
be.
Taking way too many hits.
Yeah.
They had to run the ball, and they had to get beefed up. They had to get beefed up on the defense side.
Now, all of a sudden, you look at him and Jim Harbaugh, and he's playing better. They're better collectively, sure. You look at, you know, O'Connell and Sam Darnold. I mean, you look at LaFleur and Jordan Love. It seems like the coach and the quarterback have to be in line with one another, and if you get that right combination, it's almost as important as anything else.
I agree. I think that's what most Jets fans are hoping for, too. If you're going to get a new head coach, get somebody who can really either speak to Aaron Rodgers and get him on par with what they're trying to do, or go get a new quarterback and then have that new coach, new quarterback relationship, and hopefully it grows in the right direction. I think that's what seems to be the fad right now. And when you see the tape after what Kevin O'Connell and the way Sam Darnold looks like, I know J.J. McCarthy's like, man, am I ever going to play? You know, like, how can you ever sit this kid up?
And that's a great question, which we'll get to. I was thinking around 8 o'clock, like, what do you do if you're the Vikings? You got a free agent that is playing out of it.
Out of his skull.
They're 14-2.
And think about when Kirk Cousins left. A lot of people had empathy for Justin Jefferson, right? They was like, oh, man, his number's going to drop. You pay this guy all this money. Justin Jefferson's like, that's my guy. Yeah. Like, he's never going to leave the building as long as I'm a Viking. So now you just drafted this young kid out of Michigan who, when he left Michigan, left with a pretty damn good resume. And now what happens to him? What do you tell him at the end of the season? I mean, Minnesota can make a deep run here.
Yeah. They win next week. They have home field.
Correct.
You know, and it's not to say they couldn't go into Detroit and win. I mean, they played them really tough when they did, but they have a chance. They have a real chance. So
they haven't had a chance in a long time.
Yeah, it's very interesting. All right, we got a lot to do. It's a football Monday. We have Chris Lopresti coming in. He is going to be chock full of sound.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, great to have you with us. It is Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo, Bill Fortov Studio, 888-808-1019. We will get to your Giant calls coming up in just a little while. If not, we will get some reaction from the social media world, because that's really awesome. Giants win yesterday, the Jets lose. This is, we could call this the 12 days of CeeLo, because you were here all week last week.
Yeah.
All week this week. Got any weekend to bookend it for the 12 days or no? Not really. Saturday?
No. I'm actually off Saturday.
All right, we'll call it 10 days of
CeeLo. Nothing coming up this weekend. Nothing this past weekend here. So,
okay.
You know, yeah.
So it's the 10 days of CeeLo.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I will take it. We do have a lot to get to.
Take it away.
Yeah, brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. So even after Amir Smith-Marset returned the second half kickoff 100 yards for a touchdown to give the Giants a 28-13 lead yesterday, they did still allow the Colts to get back within 2 points twice, but both times there was a response, including this.
Lock takes the snap, rolls right, hits Hayden, runs out of the tackle, he's at midfield, down the right sideline to the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, Malik Nabers, 59 yards. And today has truly been a beautiful day in Malik's neighborhood.
Oh boy.
Bob Papa with the pun here on the fan. Very nice. And it sure was. He
think he's been
wrong.
Waiting for that all year.
Oh, that's no question. And he wasn't wrong. 7 catches for 171 yards, 2 touchdowns. His neighbors went over 1,000 yards for the season. And the Giant offense waiting until week 17 to finally break out. Drew Locke in on 5 scores, 4 passing, 1 rushing, threw for 309 yards. And the Giants avoid the embarrassment of becoming the first team to go 0-9 at home. They take down the Colts 45-33 at MetLife, but of course with that win they do drop from the first overall pick in the draft down to number 4, but the players certainly aren't focused on that, Locke included.
What's it like to get that first win at home in front of fans this season?
Oh, they deserved it. The locker room deserved it. Everybody a part of this organization deserved it. It was a lot of fun.
I love that
the fans hate you.
The fans deserved it. Yeah, most of them don't want it, but I mean, that's just the way it goes. Here's Nabers now, as he and Tyrone Tracy both went over the 1,000-yard mark. And this one, only the third pair of rookies and the second since the 1970 merger to do that.
Me and him has been uplifting each other through the season. You know, we had stuff at the beginning of the season that didn't go our way, but, you know, we stayed down with each other, uplifted each other, and, you know, it's paying off.
And for him, you know, he was battling injuries all week.
Yeah.
He didn't necessarily know if he was going to play. Not only does he play, has his best,
out of this
best
world.
Game of the season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that Colts defense.
Couldn't tackle.
Yeah.
Couldn't do anything.
Pretty rough. Last words from Brian Daboll, at least for this hour. Nice moment for everyone involved.
But we got a lot of good people, a lot of good character people on our football team, and they work every day. and it's good to see results. It's good to see smile on her faces. I'm happy for the players and the coaches that put so much into it.
I was very surprised. Sorry to interrupt for a second. I was very surprised, Willie. I was telling Chris outside because I watched his 9 minutes. Not that it needed to be rude or I don't know. I couldn't believe he was not asked a question about the draft. Just from a standpoint of, you know, what fans, there are a group of fans, a large group of fans right. that, you know, want you guys to have the number one pick. Like, you know, what do you say to them? And only if it's been written about, it's been talked about. Now, I imagine maybe you could say yesterday wasn't the day. Maybe they would do that today. But I was surprised that that wasn't even brought up to him.
I think to your point, I think a lot is going to be talked about today. I think yesterday it was just enjoying the moment. This is a team that came out and fought with pride. You know, they kind of ignored the whole draft status thing, and they kind of went out there and just battled, right? And so for a rough season, man, you need something to hang your hat on. And I think yesterday was the day. Today, it's going to be a lot of questions. It's going to be a lot of...
I suppose.
Yeah, today's going to be the day he's out there doing a lot of explanation.
Well, let's see how it shakes out next week. Draft order obviously still can change.
Sure.
Right now you got the Patriots at one, which conceivably they won't be looking to take a quarterback. Now they could hold up, you know, everyone for a king's ransom if they're looking to trade out of that pick. But that's to be figured out after we get through next week's game. One more from Dable before we move on here. A reminder that this is the way it's supposed to be.
That's how the offense needs to perform. That's how the quarterback needs to perform. So when you do that, you win the turnover ratio, you have a chance to score points and win.
It's so simple when you hear it that way, isn't
yeah.
it?
And he said that, too. He's like, there's no secret to winning in the NFL. You got to do these things, which they haven't done.
Yeah. It was their first halftime lead since week 3. And obviously, they snapped that franchise record losing streak. Along the way, they will wrap up against the Eagles down in Philadelphia next Sunday afternoon. And we'll see what they do about Saquon Barkley, who is now just 101 yards away from breaking Eric Dickerson's all-time rushing record as Philly destroyed the Cowboys yesterday 41-7 to wrap up the NFC East title. Barkley ran for .167. He goes over 2,000 yards for the season.
It was amazing about that.
To do that all time.
He only had, I think, 40 yards at the half.
Yeah.
Or 43 yards.
It wasn't
yards
a big number, yeah.
It was nothing.
He had that one big one down the left side in the second.
He popped a couple. That second half, he was much more methodical.
Yep.
In the first half, you know, Dallas did a better job on him, and maybe Philly threw it a little bit more. I don't know. But, you know, I'm doing the halftime show for Compass Media Networks, and it didn't feel like he had run a lot or run for a lot. I'm like, yeah, he's not getting it today. And then he goes off in the second half.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And a bizarre game with, you know, the quarterback situation.
Yeah, Tanner McKee came in.
Hurts was out. McKee comes in. He throws a couple of touchdown passes. A.J. Brown throws his first TD pass ball into the stands. Did you see this at all?
I did.
And then they had to have that guy Dom go and seek out the fan. And Brown ended up signing a jersey for him after the game. That was a whole big
thing.
Yeah,
I was big on it. I'm glad A.J. did that. Gave up the jersey. Easy swap.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was the fan, I would have given back the ball. I would have ran off the stage.
Yeah. They were ready, though. AJ came over with, I think, just the black Sharpie. And there was a fan that was like, no, can you sign up? But I think it was a green Sharpie.
Okay.
Yeah, and he asked the guy's name and the whole thing.
Cool.
So that was kind of cool. And obviously a fun day for them as they do wrap up the division title. Now on to the Jets. Tough day to be in Orchard Park for the team of Nance and Romo. Non-competitive game. How about 33-0 after three quarters? So Sean McDermott's like, all right, that's enough of Josh Allen. Let's call off the dogs with Mitchell Trubisky in there.
This one was really embarrassing.
Except
here's a guy coming right in. That's Sabres. Look at him with that burst, taking it the distance for another Bills touchdown. I think we got a quarterback competition now, Jim.
A controversy.
Trubisky is on fire.
Just a laughingstock situation. 40-0 before Aaron Rodgers took a seat only to watch Tyrod Taylor lead a couple of window dressing touchdown drives. That was his first action since the season opener.
Yeah,
he ended up playing
in
that game in Santa Clara against the 49ers on the Monday night. 40-14, the final. And even something as simple as Rodgers taking a seat in a blowout, it's got to be on his terms and his control. As we learned after the game, Rodgers to interim head coach Jeff Olbrich.
It was 33-0. We were sitting there, and I said at some point, probably go to Tyrod here, huh? And then the next play, they threw a screen for a touchdown, so it's 40-0.
And get me out of there, pretty much, at that point. Forget the fact that he was, you know.
If you watched the game, he wasn't the only one that kind of gave that. I mean, Devontae Adams kind of gave the coach a tap on the shoulder, like, after he got supposedly hurt on the sideline. Uh-huh. He's like, I'm going to sit this one out.
Yeah. So. I mean, Rodgers with one of the worst statistical games of his career, and QBR, whatever metric you want to throw out there, it was not good. Here's example number, 1 million of a head coach blatantly lying to the media or at least sidestepping a question so as not to publicly criticize his player, in this case, a future Hall of Famer. Ulbrich asked how he thought Rodgers played in this one.
I got to look at the tape. Honestly, like, I didn't get to see a whole lot of the offense. I was doing a lot of defensive adjustments, especially that first half and a good part of that third quarter. So, we'll see when I get a good look at the tape.
Yeah, those defensive adjustments really seemed
really
to do
worked.
The trick. Another disaster. 16 accepted penalties for 120 yards. Yeah. Had Michael Clemens, leaping on top of the pile like was like some sort of superhero villain or something like
it
that.
It started early, though, CeeLo. There was penalties. It was just flying yellow flags the whole damn game.
It was hideous. Sauce Gardner was among the notables questionable coming into this one. He did suit up, but didn't even last until halftime with his hamstring issue, and he had plenty to say after watching most of the game from the sideline. Hang in there through this one, as he's asked if it was embarrassing to see 40-0 on the scoreboard in the fourth quarter.
Embarrassing, I don't even know if that's the word. Because what was the score the first time we played them?
First time
it was 23-20. Exactly. You telling me now it's 40-0, like, if you ask me, that means, like, it's the end of the season. Obviously, we're not going to playoffs. Some people might be checked out.
And that about sums it up. And
hard to argue.
Yeah.
Hard to argue.
Remember all that good feeling the last couple of weeks? Oh, Rodgers, this is the healthy version of Rodgers, and this is what it could be. You know, a couple games down there in Florida. Yeah, not so much in this one.
Nope, fell apart very quickly
it
yesterday.
Did. Elsewhere, the NFL flexed Falcons Commanders into the Sunday night window. That turned out to be a wise choice. Back and forth, down to the wire. You had a 24-all tie into overtime with playoff berths on the line for both teams. Washington gets the first possession of OT. They held the ball for over 7 minutes as they worked their way down into the red zone.
Third and goal at the 2. Two tight ends to the left. Here's the staff. He's going to throw for it. He does. Into the end zone.
What a catch.
Zekerts, who wants to go to the playoffs? Touchdown, Washington. They win it overtime. We'll see you in the postseason.
Yeah, you will. Commanders Radio. Third TD pass of the game for Jaden Daniels. Two-yarder to Zach Ertz for the 30-24 victory. That's 11 wins for Washington, their best mark since 1991 when they won Super Bowl 26 over the Bills.
I would not have had the Washington Commanders with 11 wins this year.
I don't think anybody
would.
Even
with a game to go, after next week.
Good. That's right. You can't even say, well, they got 11 because it's an 18-game schedule. They got it done
in 11-5 season.
That was a hell of a grab. If you go to the first quarter, I mean, Jaden Daniels put it on Ertz again in the end zone. He dropped it. So for him to kind of rally and win the game there, that was big.
Yep, and they are off to the playoffs as a wild card team. Meantime, the Falcons now lose control of their playoff destiny with their loss and the Bucs' victory yesterday. Also, head coach Raheem Morris taking a lot of heat for his timeout usage or lack thereof on the final drive of regulation as they let a lot of time bleed off after one completion in particular. Ended up settling for a 56-yard field goal attempt by Riley Patterson, which came up short. So Morris semi-owned it afterwards, admitted that they probably could have burned one of the timeouts there, and then proceeded to break it down further.
Thought we can get to line of scrimmage with our operation, be a little bit faster there, get them there without going on the fast and our ball, try to save that timeout. In hindsight, could have been a good decision or a better decision to take that timeout, but I wanted to have the opportunity to move up there. So, like, you can always second-guess those things. You can always second-guess those motives. You can always go back and look at him, see if you can get it snapped a little bit quicker.
As I was watching this, I thought someone had, like, sped up the tape on him. He was very, very quick. But rookie quarterback, first road game, final minute of the fourth quarter, game on the line, maybe give him a chance to breathe a little bit as there wasn't a lot of time left to conserve all those timeouts.
And 56 yards, I mean, guys can make it. Obviously, we see it routinely, but it's 56 yards outside.
Yes.
Not easy. And it was right in line.
It was. And not their regular kicker, Youngwei, who is on injured reserve. So they're already on another kicker there. A couple of the other notables. Actually, let's do it this way. Just because you want to line up the schedule as it plays out for next week with some of the results from yesterday. So you get a week 18 schedule. You have an AFC North Saturday. You got the Browns at the Ravens first. Baltimore would win the division with a victory. Then it's Bengals Steelers in the night game. The notables in the Sunday 1 p.m. window, you have the Panthers at the Falcons, Saints at the Bucks. So Tampa Bay, after blowing out Carolina yesterday, Baker Mayfield again. Ridiculous game.
Yeah, big for Baker, man.
So Tampa Bay, should they win that game, would get the NFC South crown. You will also have Giants Eagles at 1 o'clock. Late window, Chiefs at Broncos, so Denver's in the driver's seat there. They're in a win-and-in situation.
And Kansas City's not playing anybody, right, from what I read?
That'll be the case.
That's what Andy Reid normally does.
Yeah. So that would be a spot where Denver obviously could take care of business and get in. Should they lose and the Dolphins beat the Jets at MetLife Stadium, Miami would get in.
Miami over Cincinnati?
Yes.
If Cincinnati wins Saturday and puts pressure on everybody?
Yes. If Miami wins and Denver loses, as I understand it, Miami would go.
Got it.
If those two lose
and Cincinnati
wins,
right,
they get in. If all three lose, I believe Denver is the team then that would go as a wild card right there in the AFC. And then the Sunday nighter is the big one. You have the Vikings and the Lions for both the NFC North title as well as the one seed after Minnesota took care of business and beat the Packers 27-25. Sam Darnold, 377 yards passing, three touchdowns, and the Vikings have a nine-game winning streak for the first time since 1973. So all things going their way as they did end up winning that game at home against Green Bay. I know you're not big on the whole Tom Brady broadcaster thing. I'll just say he provided some content yesterday that
who's not big on it?
Well, Jerry's kind of like no.
Are you anti Brady?
No, 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 no. Oh. I'm anti all the criticism of him.
Yeah.
From the standpoint of if you think he's going to be John Madden, he's not going to be. He never was going to be. I just think his voice doesn't cut through. Like, I don't think his voice is powerful. Like, to me, Troy Aikman's got a very powerful voice. I think John Madden had the personality and a very authoritative voice. I think Mike Tomlin would be phenomenal in the booth because of the way he speaks. Tom Brady he's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with him. He ain't great. He's not bad.
But I think
he's
that's fine. A fair assessment, because I've had this conversation with other people. It was like, what do you think about Brady in the booth? I'm like, he's Brady in the booth.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't do a horrible job. He does a fine job. Mm-hmm. You can tell he's prepared.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have thrown him out there if he wasn't prepared.
There's a lot of guys that can break down a play. So what separates you? It's got to be the personality and your sound. He's got neither. Never did. Like, the only way he was going to be the new John Madden was if he reinvented himself.
Right.
That's the guy he is. Like, I don't know what we expected him to be.
I think you expect him to be the great, the GOAT, right?
He was when he played.
And especially, there's a lot of attention, obviously. Forget the fact of who he is, but what they paid him to do it.
Well,
you know?
That's another
375, 375 million,
ridiculous
like
now, amount
Boomer
of money.
Now, will tell you a lot of that is for a lot more beyond just
of
announcing
course.
Games.
Yeah, yeah.
But well, still, it's a ridiculous
care.
Number.
The viewer doesn't care as about that. They're watching the games. They're listening to him. So a couple things with him and Burkhardt from yesterday, which we will get into a little bit later on. Before I go, for this hour at least, the Nets did come up short at Orlando, 102-101. Cam Thomas, playing for the first time since late November, did have 25 points in 25 minutes off the bench. Another trade for the Nets as they continue to stockpile picks as they make a swap with the Lakers. D'Angelo Russell is back.
I'm sure he's thrilled.
Yeah.
Like, he leaves the Lakers where they're actually playing relatively well, and he's going to come back here.
And 3 second round picks coming back for Brooklyn as well, as they send Dorian Finney-Smith and Shake Milton out to L.A. Hockey-wise, Islanders failed to complete a home-and-home sweep of the Penguins. They lost in Pittsburgh 3-2. In that game, Sidney Crosby breaking Mario Lemieux's career assist record, which is obviously a pretty big deal as far as the NHL goes. Tonight, you got the Rangers at the Panthers. Little different vibe from when they met in the East Finals some 7 months ago. So, another loss for the Blue Shirts over the weekend. And the Knicks will play the back end of two in a row against the Wizards in D.C. going for an eighth straight win. They had to come from behind Saturday. Jalen Brunson with 50. Brunson, he's done it twice in this winning streak now. At New Orleans, at the Wizards, a couple of bad teams where they kind of let them hang around.
But you know what? They've taken care of business, though.
They have, but we talked like he's been more of the facilitator, distributor. Yep. But when they need him to step up and do his thing, seems like he can almost turn it on at will when needed, and they are 22-10 now, playing good basketball.
All right, Chris, thanks very much. We'll see you next hour. When we come back, your calls, 888-808-1019 on the Giants or anything NFL. And if not, I've got something with the Giant tweets that we will get to that started with a Giant tweet. Follow the bouncing ball. I'll explain when we come back. Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, great to have you with us. Football Monday, Bill Fortev Studio, Willie and Jerry in for Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So, like every sports team would do, when you win or you lose, you usually post a graphic with the score.
Sure.
So as soon as within minutes of the Giants winning, from the official Giants website, they've got a picture and a tweet. It says, Giants win with the score, 45-33. And within minutes, I'm sitting there and I see the amount of replies. And it's going up and it's going up. And my first thought is, this can't be good. Like, there's no way in the land of hate, which is essentially social media, it's just not a good place to reside.
It's not a good place to build your confidence.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there is no way that Giant fans are so into this win that the response numbers are going through the roof. So I decided to grab some. And I will tell you this. I grabbed them in order, and I only grabbed, I guess, about 12.
Did you have to cross out or blank out some words?
Actually, no.
Okay.
Did not. No. So they were very respectful in that regard. So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It looks like I got 14. Out of the 14, how many do you think are positive? And there are positive ones.
5.
No. No. So here was the first one. This was from Jen O'Regan. Quote, "I quit. They don't even know how to lose properly." That's fine. It's not terrible. Okay, fine. Then there's, I put my glasses on. I can't read. Then there is Charlie Quinn. All right. Charlie Quinn. Quote, "Absolutely nothing to celebrate about. That should be the nail in the coffin for Brian Daboll. Just lost our future quarterback today." I don't know that that's true, but that's okay, fine. True. The Clem Report posted a GIF saying, or a GIF, whatever you say, "Sometimes when you win, you really lose." Kevin Water, "I hate you so much." I thought that one was funny. From Quez, "Worst run franchise in sports." From Vetch, "Giants win, and now we're the biggest losers. Team can't do anything right." Stop me when I get to a positive one. One is coming, I promise you. From a guy by the name of Kevin, "Not only do they screw up the lock for the number one pick, they score 45 points to lose any tiebreaker." Jerry, "I want to have a cage match with the intern making these tweets." All right, so now I'm going to give you a positive one. This is from a guy by the name of Carl. "Love the way they played today. History shows the number one pick is often overrated, especially for quarterbacks." Interesting he writes that, because sometime this morning we're going to go over that.
Right,
I actually have a list of those. "I'd rather see a team come together and fight like they did today. First time all year, Malik Nabers smiled and had fun. Hope they take it to the Eagles next week."
Positive. I like that.
So he's going in a completely different direction.
Love that.
From Luke, "I want the whole fan base to boycott this team."
Not good.
Not good. From a guy by the name of Cheddar Oats. That's his name. What can I tell you? "Well, that sucks. We could have had the first pick in the draft. All of a sudden, the team wants to play competitive football." All right. Here comes another good one. And this one is interesting. Samuel writes, "Can't believe I'm seeing our own fans complaining about this win. No game is meaningless, and games like this will help set up a foundation of winning culture. I'm happy we won and excited to see Coach Brian Daboll continue leading this team." That's positive.
Now, I
don't necessarily agree with the fact that a win like this can set a foundation, because they won a game last year that didn't exactly...
Well, it just shows that they cared, right? They didn't go out there and just give up. It's been ugly all season. They actually put up a fight.
They did put up a fight. Two more. From Daniel, "Set back the team 4 years by not losing this game for a first overall. This team did absolutely nothing right this season."
No, what set you back was drafting Daniel Jones.
Correct. And, well, yeah, and they did go to the playoffs, though.
They did, that one time.
And then the final one, from a guy that you guys are very familiar with. His name is Chris McMonagle.
Okay.
He is the overnight host here at WFAN. He fills in during the day from time to time. He has been one that has wanted this team to lose the rest of their games. He wanted control of the draft. He wanted the number one pick. He wrote, now this was not in relation to the Giants tweet. This was in relation to just his reaction to the win. I actually went and sought this out because I was curious what he wrote. And he wrote, quote, "Worst victory in the 100 years of Giants football."
The worst?
That's what he wrote. "Worst victory in the 100 years of Giants football." So there you have that. That's a sample size. But I will tell you, as you can, there were hundreds of replies to this. As you continue going down the list of replies, this was a, I think this was a 13-2 ratio. I would say 13-2 is about right.
Yeah, like I said, listen, I've always been on the boat of saying drafting a quarterback that high is like winning the lottery.
You know, it can be.
It's extremely hard. Yep. Doesn't matter how much you dive into a guy, know everything about him. A lot of things have to work for that guy to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see. But listen, like I said, they're not. Shadur and Cam could still fall to number
absolutely.
4. So there's no, if you're a Giants fan, it's the wall isn't coming down. Like, there's still a lot to be had.
The only thing that we know is they don't have control over it.
That's it.
Right.
So I'm of the mindset, if you're a Giants fan, you could be pissed off about it. But understand, like, there's still a lot of things that, listen, we don't know the security of Daboll and Joe Sheen, right? A lot is up. So I don't know. I just rather see this Giants fans. It's hard to ask them to be patient. But
it's like asking the Jet fan to be patient.
Right.
A little different.
Let this thing play out a little bit.
Here is Sonny in Malvern. What's up, Sonny? Good morning. Oh, Sonny.
Contrary to the fans' belief, I don't think the sky is falling. I think they were interested in Sanders, to tell you the truth, but I still think they're going to still have one of the top two quarterbacks, which I think both of them are not, unfortunately, franchise quarterbacks. It's a coin toss. So they might wind up with Ward, which is not a bad thing. And you can't expect the players or anybody in that building to go out there and not put forth 100% effort. So can't blame the players or the coaching staff. I think the decision for the coach has been made prior to this game anyway, guys. Your thoughts?
You might be right. I'm of the belief that he's not going anywhere. Like, I think he's coming back. I think both Shane and Dable are coming back. I don't know that. That's just a feeling I have.
I think people don't understand that when you get a new head coach and you get a new GM, the turnover is catastrophic. Right.
Well, but the Giants have done it numerous times now in the last 10 years.
Right, and it hasn't worked out for them. And also, I think as much as people see them as a package deal, I do think they're being judged individually, which is interesting in itself. So John Mara has a lot to decide. But I do, to your point, I think they're both coming back. I don't see them leaving.
And I think, which is something CeeLo and I were talking about last week, there's got to be something to be said for some sort of consistency. Now, if your head coach is a complete train wreck, and
meaning
the team,
like who would be a train wreck?
Well, I think Pat Shurmur at the end was. I thought Pat Shurmur, with the way he handled the media, there were a lot of. I'd have to go back and revisit all of the things we talked about at the time. I thought Joe Judge year two was a mess of a head coach.
McAdoo.
Again, McAdoo is another one. At times looked fine, and then it fell apart on him. I know this is going to sound stupid because they're 3-13. I've never looked at Brian Daboll.
Same. I'm with you. I already know where you're at. I'm the same. It never looked like it was
it doesn't
out
look
of control.
Too big
it looked like
for
a circus. It just like they just had the wrong quarterback trying to lead this team, correct, along with a lot of other issues.
I don't feel like I've watched them. And again, I preface it by saying I'm well aware what the record is and what the record was last year. I get all of that. But all I can tell you is the gut feeling and the eye test. I still feel like he is a coach that has an idea of what he wants to be done on the field, but he hasn't had the guys out there that could execute it properly.
I agree.
And so if I was running this team, I would say enough with the turnover every 3 years. We're going to give this guy a chance beyond, obviously, the first
year. Yeah, and get him a quarterback he can operate with, right?
Yeah.
And let him pick the quarterback and let him be comfortable who's going to be that guy.
And how do you know that that guy isn't someone other than Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders? And history will tell you that, and at some point this morning, we'll go over it. There's so many examples, you know, history repeats itself, where that first pick turns out to be a whole lot of nothing or very average.
Because they're not ready.
Right.
They're not ready for the show, and that's the biggest problem. When you're drafting a guy that high, he has to be ready. And if he's not, the whole thing comes crumbling down, and people become unemployed because of it.
Correct.
And so it's not easy, man. It's just not.